Life Audio.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations.
We want families to come here and gain insightful strategies that empower them to successfully teach diverse learners at home.
Hosted by founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool, Peggy Ployer.
Our goal is that these powerful weekly conversations will boost your confidence to cultivate the best at-home learning environment for your student.
For more homeschool resources, go to spedhomeschool.com. You're listening to Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer. We'll start the conversation with Peggy and her guests next.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool, a nonprofit that empowers families to home educate diverse learners. To learn more, visit spedhomeschool.com. Here's Peggy Ployer.
I always ask my guests when they first get started to share just a little bit about themselves and their family. Now, I know you're a homeschooler as well, mm-hmm. and a busy homeschool mom, because you also run a co-op. Mm-hmm. And so you've got a lot of things going on.
For sure.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about your family, and then we'll kind of dive into maybe why you're so passionate about this topic.
Okay. I've got a husband, and we've been married for 25 years. It'll be actually 26 next week. And
congratulations.
So, thank you.
Yeah.
I've got a son that's 20, so I've graduated one.
Yay.
That feels good. I've got a 17-year-old daughter that's a senior this year, so can see the light at the end of the tunnel for
right.
her. And then my baby is a 13-year-old who's muddling through eighth grade this
wow.
year, who asked me if she could take a gap year between eighth grade
and high school. You know, well, that's not a bad idea.
I was like, that's not a thing. But it did make me laugh.
Yes.
It did make me laugh.
Oh, that's great.
So we've been homeschooling the whole time. My son did end up doing kindergarten at a private school, but okay. that was
similar
not because we wanted to go to private school, but just because I needed some help. I had him and the toddler, and I was pregnant
yes.
with the baby. And so we just did that, and it was okay, but, still not the best fit. So we've been home ever since. And,
wow.
and we've always done all of our academics at home. I've just barely started to outsource a few classes. Probably in retrospect, I should have done a little bit more as they got into high school. But I always thought, well, I can teach everything. I got good grades in high school and college. Like, I can teach all this stuff.
Right.
Not really realizing that it was also important for them to learn to be responsible to someone else.
Right. That is really important in those high school years. Absolutely.
So we've done a little bit more of that now with the second one, and we'll probably do a little bit more.
I think that I kind of gradually did the same thing. And my oldest, mm-hmm. I never, you know, he did unit studies, everything was at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then my middle one, well, he kind of just decided he wanted to write his own curriculum too. And then and my youngest, yeah. I did end up outsourcing a lot more. And then she begged me to teach her math. So
mm-hmm.
I ended up back teaching math, but it was a good fit. She just really needed that personal interaction. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just every child's so different.
That's so true.
But I think you do, as you homeschool longer, you learn to let go
mm-hmm.
and realize, I don't have to be everything
mm-hmm.
for everybody.
mm-hmm. So that's totally my tendency.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us just are. We
mm-hmm.
as we dive into homeschooling and want to do our best for our kids. And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So we're talking about nutrition today, and I would love for you to share just a little bit about how your nutrition journey started, because I think we all have some sort of story. Otherwise, mm-hmm. we'd still be kind of going on the same path as we started out on and say, what? You know, I eat mm-hmm. and that's it. Mm-hmm. But there's usually something that happens along that path that goes, puts you in check.
Mm-hmm. Well, I grew up in Texas eating just whatever my mom fixed for me. I know that we never had a lot of money, so we weren't right. eating, you know, quality food, I guess. There was a time that we were even on, I don't know, government subsidized. I forget what it was called when I was little, but I know we went and yeah. picked up government cheese sometimes or something like that.
Yeah, we did too.
So it wasn't really until I got a little bit older, you know, as I think as you're a teenager and you start getting like body conscious and, you know, that right. kind of thing happens, that I thought, oh, maybe I should be careful about what I eat. And I think that also coincided with the nationwide and probably worldwide low fat craze.
Oh, yes. That kind of happened. I remember when that happened.
Exactly. Back in then. So I was in high school, like early 90s. And I thought, oh, yeah, that makes sense, right? Don't eat fat. And then you won't get fat.
Right. It seems to make sense.
Right. Well, it kind of, yeah, seemed to at the time. So I kind of, you know, just started kind of watching what I ate a little bit to me. I thought I was eating healthy. And then, and I never had any like health issues or never any weight issues. So I thought everything was, right. you know, yeah. just fine, mm-hmm. just fine. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And it really wasn't until I got pregnant with my first child. So I was 25 and I was seeing a midwife because I had just started to kind of get into that realm. I was kind of the opinion at first, like, well, if I had the option to like not feel pain during childbirth, Why would I not do that? But I was so fortunate to be going to a church with a chiropractor that was our Bible study teacher.
Wow.
And so he and his wife had a practice and his sister also practiced with them. And she really just made it a point to talk to me about, well, you know, have you thought about this? And have you thought about this? And I was like, oh no, I really haven't. I haven't thought about any of that.
Right.
So that started a little bit of the journey. They actually pointed me to a midwife and I thought, well, that sounds kind of cool. So I was actually seeing an OB-GYN and the midwife at the same time, because I thought, well, you know, second opinion kind of thing.
Best
well,
I'm both trying worlds. This out. Yes.
Well, the midwife asked me at one point to write down a food log of everything that I ate for a couple of days. And then she wanted to see that at my next appointment because she was all about nutrition, preventing all these complications of pregnancy, like that you can prevent preeclampsia and the high blood pressure and the gestational diabetes and all these things by controlling your diet while you're pregnant. So I was like, okay, I'll write down everything. So I turn it in and she kind of looks at me like, really? Frosted mini wheats for breakfast? And I was like, what? It's whole wheat. Like, right.
That's and they have vitamins added, don't they?
Right. And it was like, you know, a ham and cheese sandwich for lunch, but whole wheat bread, like it's fine.
Yes.
And then for dinner, you know, pork chops and a rice-a-roni and canned green beans. And I was like, that's the three food groups on the plate. Like I got this, right? This is great.
That's how I grew up eating.
Yes. And she was like, oh, honey, we need to talk about this. And so I was like, oh, really? Like very like, oh, what? I thought I was doing the right thing.
Right.
She was very big about getting a very high amount of protein while you're pregnant. She's like, babies are made out of protein. You need to be eating a lot of protein, all the building blocks for all of the cells and all this stuff. I think she was advising at that time, like 80 to 90 grams of protein a day, which I was like, oh my goodness, how am I going to do that?
Right.
So there I was all of a sudden eating almonds all the time. And I mean, I even had like beef jerky. I was teaching in public school at the time. So I needed to have like, you know, snacks. You know how you're just hungry all the time. So I was eating... Well, I really ate a lot of dairy then too. I was cottage cheese and boiled eggs and all these things to try to get that much protein. But I mean, during the whole pregnancy, I felt great. I didn't have any problems. I gained exactly 25 pounds, you know, like they say you're supposed to.
Right.
And I mean, everything went just perfectly. So I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe there is something to this.
Right.
But as you can imagine, my husband was maybe a little slower to come along. Right. And he's like, why can't we have, you know, biscuits and gravy and stuff for breakfast now? And so my plan at that time was to just start tweaking our diet, but just like little by little, because I thought, fortunately, my husband is not picky. So he'll eat anything that I put in front of him generally. So I thought if I just change little by little, and he won't really notice, it won't be that big of a deal. And that actually worked extremely well. I picked breakfast.
Okay.
And I started reforming breakfast. I was like, okay, no more frosted mini wheats for breakfast. Let's make some choices with some less sugar and stuff like that. So we did better and I felt like I got breakfast to a good place. And then I started working on lunch and making better choices for what we ate for lunch. Less processed meat and, you know, less dairy. And then we worked on dinner a little bit at a time.
Got it.
So I was able to really make a lot of changes and he was able to go along with it. Like I said, because he wasn't that picky, which is great. But also it was so gradual that he honestly didn't even notice for a long time.
Right.
That anything was changing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you do make those little changes, it's a lot easier instead of going full bore. And then people are like, in your family going, how long is this going to last? Mm-hmm. How long do I have to tolerate it? And
After a word from our sponsor, we'll dive back into this conversation.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool. Go to spedhomeschool.com to get resources and support for teaching your unique learner at home.
But they say that the more you're exposed to a certain foods, like new foods, it's going to take you a little while to get used to them.
Mm-hmm.
But then over time, you just acclimate to them. Because I suppose now, if you went back to your old diet, you know, your family would probably like it a little bit, but but yet it's just not what they're used to anymore.
Right. And that, especially once I had the baby and I was like, oh, like this is my responsibility to raise him. So my goal was get them used to real food and their palate will acclimate to that so that when they have fake food or stuff that's not healthy, it won't be as appealing.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, kind of mixed results there as they have gotten into
adulthood. Engineering has made bad food taste good.
Unfortunately. That does make it difficult. But, I mean, there were a few successes. Like the first time my daughter, we were traveling or something and we stopped and she had a grilled cheese sandwich with like American cheese, which she had never had before. She threw it up. Like, I was like, oh, okay, well, good. We knocked that off the list for us. I made a point of telling her that was that kind of cheese and that is not good for you. So you should not eat it. She was like, okay. Never wanted it again.
Learned. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're kind of talking a little bit more like diet. How does that relate to nutrition? And is there a difference between the two?
Mm-hmm. So to me, and I know people can define it a little bit differently, but to me, diet is whatever you're eating. Whatever you are putting in your mouth is your diet. Of course, people like to say, I'm going on a diet. Well, you're already on one.
Yes, that's true.
You can change your diet, but it's whatever food you're eating. You know, you've heard of keto diet or a low carb or paleo, right? Or, you know, this or that, gluten-free diets, all these things. But really, the diet just encompasses everything that you're putting into your mouth.
Got it. So if we created a food log, that would be our diet of what we've been eating.
Mm-hmm. And you've also heard the standard American diet.
Yes.
What the acronym is SAD, standard American diet, because it's typically not very nutrient dense and a lot of packaged and processed foods. So yeah, that would be one to definitely avoid.
Right.
So yeah. Then I would say nutrition is what is in the food.
Got it.
What is in your diet? People sometimes will track their, it's kind of a trendy thing, I think, tracking your macros. I'm just going to track my macros. Well, that they mean macronutrients.
Okay.
So the big groups being fats and proteins and carbs. So sometimes people will try to, you know, control their weight or whatever by controlling what percentage of calories you get from these three different groups.
Okay.
Which can be effective. But that also, you're not thinking also about the whole picture still.
Right.
I think thinking about vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients that are in or supposed to be in the food that we're eating. And that's where the true nutrition comes from.
So you said supposed to be. So what actually can we get out of the food that we eat?
Well, the sad fact is that even if you're eating a really healthy diet, say you are eating lots of veggies, you're eating lots of fruits. If these are all things that you are getting from the grocery store, then they just don't have the nutrition in it that we truly need. I mean, there's a whole big, of course, long story that we could go into about farming practices and how they have changed over the years. But I mean, if you think about it, right, they're, it's very simple. If there's a whole field where you're growing tomatoes and you grow the tomatoes and then they grow more tomatoes there the next time and grow more tomatoes, right, doesn't it make sense that they have used up all the stuff in the soil to make good tomatoes?
Right. Over time, you're
right,
getting nothing.
And even if they fertilize, typically they're only fertilizing with a couple of things, you know, some potassium in there and some magnesium. They're not fertilizing with the full array of vitamins and minerals that ought to be in the soil.
Right.
And the fertilizer that they're using is not likely something that's natural. It's probably a chemical that was made,
right,
and potassium made in a lab is just not the same as potassium found in nature. So right, it doesn't get absorbed the same way into the plant, which means it doesn't get absorbed into our bodies in the same way either. So as hard as we may try and as good as you may think that your diet is, it's just not the same. I mean, I've seen some statistics where it said you would have to eat 60 cups of spinach today to equal 1 cup of the spinach nutrients from 100 years ago.
That's crazy.
I can't eat that much spinach.
No, exactly. Not even if you cook it down.
No. And I mean, that's just that one, you know, the amount of iron in the spinach or whatever, like, but that's just right, to show a degradation of our nutrients overall. So I think if you are not supplementing with vitamins and minerals, then you're missing a big part of your health picture and you are deficient. It's just a matter of times before some symptoms may show.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about supplementation. Is there a good understanding of, you know, where do you start? How do you find out then what you're maybe most deficient in? Because mm-hmm. we probably all have certain areas where our diet, because of the way we eat, we're, you know, some levels might be high, some might be low. Or if people are even supplementing, they may be supplementing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's almost safe to say we probably need everything. But I would say the most important place to start is to get a quality supplement. Whatever you're going to do, make sure it is high quality. Because if you're thinking, well, I'll just run down to Walmart and grab some, you know, women's one a day off the shelf. Right. I got bad news for you. That's not really going to work. And here's why. Those, just like I was saying about the fertilizer, those vitamins were all created in a lab.
Right.
They're all chemically reproduced. And even if it has like the same name, it's not the same thing as that being in nature. So vitamin C is not just found as ascorbic acid all by itself. It's surrounded by other what they call cofactors, itty bitty little things that we don't know the name of and that are vitally important, even though we don't really know about them, but they surround the vitamin C or the vitamin E or the vitamin whatever. Right. And that's how they're found in nature. Your body needs those cofactors in order to metabolize that nutrient. When you buy it from Walmart, it does not have those cofactors. So you're getting the ascorbic acid and your body's like, oh, thanks, great. All right. Well, I need these cofactors to metabolize it. So it starts grabbing these cofactors from somewhere else in your body, and then it can metabolize it. So you might feel a little bit of improvement if you're on a vitamin for a short time, but then your body is going to run out.
Deplete yourself of everything else.
Right. You're out of the cofactors. And so then you'll typically have a fall off of energy or whatever thing that particular nutrient was supposed to be doing. So you've got to make sure that it's reputable and even ideally it's made from plant or animal sources to where they get this plant. They have figured out which part of the plant is the highest concentration of whatever this nutrient is. They can, freeze dry it or whatever and, pack it into tablets and then you take it. If you look on the labels of those kinds of supplements, you would see vitamin C and it might say 12%. And you're like, well, that's not very much. This one I have over here says vitamin C 3000%.
Right.
So it seems like that's better and even a better value or a better buy, but it's really not. Because again, that one doesn't have the cofactors. It's going to be robbing your body from everywhere else. This one has the cofactors, and that's actually a really good way to tell if the supplement is real, is because it doesn't have a super high percentage listed. So if you get a quality one, that's a great place to start.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's something that we definitely don't learn by going to a regular doctor. I'd never heard that before from a regular doctor.
Sadly, again, that's another statistic you'll hear, that doctors go to medical school for a long, long time, probably 8 years. And usually the amount of time that they spend talking about nutrition is an hour.
Wow.
Literally 1 hour of one class, one time. And they're like, there's a bunch of vitamins and here's the name of them. And okay, we're moving on.
Right.
It's just not part of the medical study in a typical medical school. So your doctor just doesn't know.
Right. So let's talk about deficiencies. Mm-hmm. And how do we even know if we have a deficiency?
Well, there are a lot of ways that deficiencies are going to show up. And some of them, they can be very, very subtle and they can be very huge. You just kind of have to know what to look for. I would say any sort of pain that you are in, the pain is a signal that something is not right.
Yeah.
That's there for a reason. You should respond to it. There can also be, even small things like the color of your eyes or your eyes just looking dull.
Right.
Your tongue, if it has a big canyon down the middle of it, or if it looks like it's waxy or coated, your fingernails, if you don't have a lunula peeking out from the fingernails, or if they have ridges, or your heels could be cracked, skin things, eczema.
Right.
Anything where your body is like not right. Hair thinning, very waxy ears. I mean, a persistent cough, being cold all the time or being hot all the time, or I mean, all of these is a sign that something is not, God created you to be in perfect working order.
Right.
So if you are not, then that's something that we should pay attention to. Right. And again, most traditional doctors are not trained to look for those small things. So I would advise seeking out, you know, a nutritionist, a functional doctor, a chiropractor, something in that kind of realm, even an acupuncturist. Typically, they would have more training in picking out those little small signs. It's right. like a check engine light on your car. So you don't just ignore that. Well, some people do.
And then put tape over it. That would be a good solution.
Gets into a bad place. So you want to...
It's like a lotion or a medication that we use.
Exactly.
Instead of...
Mm-hmm. I've got this eczema spot. I'm going to give you this cream and put on it. Right. But that's not addressing the root issue of why that is happening. Right. And that's where I feel like the big disconnect in traditional medicine is. They don't look for a cause. They just treat the symptom most of the time.
Right. Yeah. It's a journey though. And that's that I think it's really hard because we live in this day and age where we want a simple solution to the problem we have, which ends up being a pill. And a lot of people aren't willing to swallow the larger pill that says, no, you've got to change.
Right.
You've got to do something different. And what you're doing right now is leading to that. Mm-hmm. And it may take a long time because at least from my experience, I know that deficiencies sometimes take a long time to replenish as well. And so that can be a journey. And it seems like nothing's happening for a long time too. So we were talking before we started the broadcast about blood tests and finding deficiencies. Do you want to share any little bit about that and what somebody be looking for in a blood test that could show those deficiencies?
Well, a typical blood panel that you're going to get, you know, in a blood work for a doctor, you will typically have to ask for a full blood panel. If you'll just ask for some blood work, you know, they may run a couple of things and not even run like a full diagnostic that you would want to see. But there, it's going to show a lot of things. They'll count your red blood cells and your white blood cells and count your platelets and, you know, check for all kinds of things. But even with a full blood panel to look at results, okay, so you have them. And of course, to you and I, we're like, what is all this stuff? Yeah. What are eosinophils? I don't know what those neutrophils are. And again, a lot of doctors aren't super trained to look. They just kind of, they can see what we can see. There's that little column where it's like high, low, normal.
And right, like, exactly. Okay. Then you look through and go, what's on the red? Because that must be what I have to pay attention to.
And so if it was that simple, right, then you and I could do this and we'd be like, all right, I'm high right there. And so I'll take care of that. Yeah. But I would say to look beyond that, and which just it takes some training. It takes some expertise. Again, the functional medicine doctor, you know, a nutritionist, they would be able to read into that a little bit deeper and maybe even see things before they pop up as symptoms.
Right.
Because I mean, my nutritionist says your liver can be 80% diseased before it shows up on a liver panel, because our liver is so resilient and it'll keep doing what it's supposed to be doing and it'll keep trying, but you could be in really deep trouble before it actually shows up on a test.
Yeah. And it's inside us. It's not like we can check it. You know, it's not like our skin that's, you know, showing different things. So,
well, and there are some, even some other tests like, I mean, I think gut health is
huge.
I mean, top priority. Some people would say 80% of disease starts in the gut. Some would say 100% of disease starts in the gut. So if your gut is not healthy, you're just going to be prone to a lot more things. Think about it. You're not digesting the food that you're eating. You might not even be digesting your supplements that you're taking.
Right.
That happened to me for a little while. I was like, I mean, I actually found a supplement in the toilet and I was like, that can't be good. I had heard about that happening with, you know, cheap supplements, whatever, that like the guys that own porta potty talk about sucking all the vitamins out of the porta potty. Right. And I thought, no, I'm taking good stuff. Like, this should not be happening. And so I contacted my nutritionist right away, and he was like, you got to be kidding me. That's supposed to be impossible. And I was like, I don't know what to tell you. Here it is. I mean, not digested at all. Like, the coating wasn't even off of it. And so he called his sales rep for that particular company. That sales rep did not believe him. He was like, do you know this patient? Are they trying to pull one over on you? Like, this should not be possible. These are designed to dissolve in water in 45 minutes. So he's like, maybe you got a bad batch. It did.
Wow.
He had me do a little experiment, and being a homeschool mom that I was, I took it a couple steps further. He said, put it in water. Cause I knew what supplement it was because I was only taking one that was that particular shape. He said, put it in water. So I put one in vinegar too. Cause I was like, you know, right, stomach acid, let's see. And he said, give it a little stir every 15 minutes and let me know. So I stirred them 15 minutes. The one that was in water had started to kind of come apart a little bit. Okay. But the one in the vinegar, interestingly, hadn't. So after 45 minutes, sure enough, the one that was in water was breaking up into powder. The coating was all open. The one that was in vinegar was not. It had just started to just open just a tiny bit.
Interesting. You'd think right. It'd be totally different.
Uh-huh. I did. He said that, well, that particular supplement was encoded with a special coating to get it through your stomach acid so that it could be delivered to the intestines.
Got it. So there wasn't enough liquid in your intestines or what?
Turned out to be, which, I mean, we were both just befuddled at first, but I did a stool test where it checks. I mean, this one was super comprehensive. It's called a GI map. It's a particular stool test, and they tell, I mean, everything that's going on in there, every kind of individual strain of bacteria, checks for funguses, parasites, protozoas, everything in there. Even opportunistic bad guys, of course. So I found out from that I had an overgrowth of H. pylori bacteria.
Oh, wow.
So H. pylori is naturally found in your stomach. And it is a bacteria. It kind of like lies in wait. When you eat, you know, the stomach acid comes out and it does what it's supposed to. The H. pylori kind of comes out and helps dissolve the food and stuff. And then, I think the H. pylori comes out first, then the stomach acid. So the stomach acid then kills the H. pylori after it's done its job and kind of keeps it in check.
Okay.
If you have an overgrowth of H. pylori, this can lead to stomach ulcers. Now, I did not have a stomach ulcer
yet.
I did not. Right. Yeah. I did not know that really anything was amiss in my intestines at all. I wasn't having any of the typical symptoms that you would have.
Right.
Except for a supplement going all the way through. So anyway, once we found that out, he was like, well, that makes sense. So your stomach is not producing enough acid, so it's not killing the H. pylori after it comes out and does its job, so it just continues to grow and grow and grow.
Wow.
So I wasn't digesting my food. I had also kind of mysteriously lost about 10 pounds during that time, which I was just thinking, oh, cool.
Yeah, right.
I didn't even really try. But then I was like, oh, yeah, this is not good.
No.
Like, I'm not.
Right, because you're not getting any nutrients out of what was already there, or your supplements either.
And right, which was a real bummer. Yeah. I was spending all that money on all those supplements, and they weren't doing any good. So I had to go through a pretty rigorous treatment for the H. pylori, because it takes a while. You got to take some really nasty tasting stuff, and it's about a 3-month process to get it back in check. And then you have to wait 3 months of doing nothing and then retest to see if you got it all.
Oh, wow. But there's supposed to be some in there. It's just not the overgrowth.
Right. To test to make sure your levels are where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Cause we did an anti candida diet because we had an overgrowth of candida in our family. And, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, did we balance it properly? Mm-hmm. And then not to overfeed it again.
For sure.
That's so I guess that moves us into another really good conversation of, you know, we sometimes have overgrowth of things in our bodies. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people talk about detoxing. Mm-hmm. So what is detoxing and when and why should we do it?
So detoxification, if you think about just the root words, homeschool moms love the root words, right?
Exactly.
D and then toxins, right? So you're taking out the toxins. So I think of it as giving your body a break from toxins. You're giving your body a break from taking in any toxins because we do on a daily basis. We're breathing air that has icky chemicals in it. We're probably using, you know, products, shampoos and lotions and makeup and stuff on our body that has some icky stuff in it. We're eating food that undoubtedly has icky stuff in it. So all these things are going into your body. So a toxin I would classify as anything that your body can't use, anything that it doesn't need. So these things, I mean, our organs are made to, you know, clean some stuff do a good job, but they need some help. You kind of think of a detox as like changing the oil, you know, you'll change the oil. You'll also change the oil filter and get your engine running again, like it's supposed to. So I think detox is an important part of your overall health picture. So during a detox, you would try to eliminate taking in as many toxins as you possibly can. So this would mean eating all organic. This would mean eating really only vegetables and things that are very easy for your body to process so that it's not working hard on digesting. It can focus all of its energy on the detoxification process. So you might do like juices and smoothies and stuff like that, just to make things really, really easy on your body, just to give it a break. I mean, even as far as, you know, some resting, you might incorporate some other things like a detox foot bath or, you know, a sauna, those kind of things to help your body get as much out as possible.
Right. Yeah.
Cleans out the liver. Your liver is like a great big filter. That's kind of the oil filter in your body. It does a lot of, it does most of the heavy lifting for toxins and stuff. So you give the liver a break because it's probably got a bunch of junk built up in there. And then if you're not taking any more in, it can process all the stuff that's already in there and get back to a good place.
Right. So how often is it recommended that you do kind of like a detox?
I mean, I think you could find recommendations that are all over the place. My nutritionist that I see, he recommends 42 days out of the year.
Okay.
You could break that up however you want. He typically will do like 2 21 day ones at a time. But if, you know, you find what works for you, if it's one week out of the month, and you do that every other month, I mean, that kind of gets you to the same goal.
Right.
I think it would also depend just where you are on your health journey. Yeah. Some people have tried a detox and it was a dumpster fire, flaming disaster. No. You know, they felt terrible. I mean, the first time my husband did one, he had serious flu-like symptoms for the first 3 days. I mean, he was feverish. He had chills. He was throwing up. He had diarrhea. And I was like, what is happening? Like, this is not good. Cause I wasn't having those same symptoms. And I thought, did he just really get sick or what?
Yeah.
So I'm talking to the nutritionist and he's like, well, let's talk about his past a little bit. Oh. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, he said that stuff's got to come out at some point. Wow. Because there had been years of, you know, smoking or nicotine use and even, you know, drug use, alcohol use before. And this was his first detox ever to do. So there was
Body just kind of like puts it in compartments and hides it away. And there has to be a process to get it out.
For sure.
Wow.
And since that was the first one that he had ever done, I mean, it was kind of a good thing. It showed you like the detox is working.
Right.
Like this, the stuff is coming out that it's supposed to, but we're like, okay, that was a little too much too soon.
Right.
So we kind of just modified to tweak things a little bit, to make it a little bit easier for his body to handle. So don't think that if you had some symptoms like that, well, I shouldn't detox. That was horrible. You know, that I'm not going to do that again. That would actually be like the opposite conclusion to come to.
Right.
You just need to be able to tweak things a little bit to just make it a little bit easier for your body to handle. Start easier, just start a little bit slower.
And I think that points to also that it's probably really good advice to be doing this under the supervision of a professional that knows what you're going to possibly run into and why that those symptoms are coming about. Because we can conclude that, well, this just isn't for me. And I think a lot of times we do that because we hit those bumps and, well, it should just be easy, right? It's because I'm not putting anything bad in, so nothing bad should be coming about. So yes,
right. And you saw a cool detox on YouTube, and you know these people are doing it, and it sounds fun and it sounds easy. And I'm not saying, you know, to not ever do that, but if I need some plumbing fixed at my house, I am going to call a plumber because that is expertise that I do not have.
Right.
And I may think, I watched a video on YouTube about how to change this part of the toilet, right? So I may think that I'm doing it right, but because I've never done it before, I don't know all there is to know about that.
Right.
So
or some of the things you might run into that were buried.
Right.
Within your system.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is why we have people doing all these different jobs. When you need that expertise, go to a person who's trained for that, just like you would in any other area of your life.
So who would you go to? I know you've mentioned functional doctors, and I know what a functional doctor is, but maybe my audience does not. What's the difference between like what you'd get with a functional doctor? What would you look for in a chiropractor that could help in this, or a nutritionist?
Well, I think I could speak to chiropractor and nutritionist better. I think you could probably speak to functional doctor a little bit better. So for a nutritionist, I would be looking for someone who is very centered on me and doing what my body needs.
Good advice.
And yes, like looking at me in particular, because everyone is so different. I mean, we know this, right? We all, different diets work for different people. And I mean, just like we all have different taste in clothes, like our body functions differently. Your metabolism is different. So I would want somebody who was giving me a very individualized plan and not just, you know, a blanket. Well, this is what I tell everybody to do.
Right.
I'd also want somebody who was willing to listen to me. And if I've already done some work, you know, I've already done some research, some things that I've already tried, and I would have some input, you know, just get us a little further down the road, I would definitely want them to be open to listening to, to what I have to say. And just input along the way instead of, you know, do you go into the visit and the doctor's just like talking
and
talking
can't say a thing.
and you don't get to address your concerns? No, I mean, I always say every time you're going to see a doctor, especially or any of these people that we go to for their expertise, have a list of questions ready, a list of your concerns, whatever you want to address so that you don't forget or get, you know, go down some rabbit hole and forget what you're talking about.
Exactly. Especially if they're one of those people that does have a lot to say, because then you're like, well, what was my question? Because they're so off topic now.
A lot of times, too, I'll voice record the appointment so I can listen to it later, because probably I missed something or forgot a little detail of something. So I have found that to be very helpful.
Yeah.
I would also want to know that somebody had some resources there for me. I would want to know that they were not just basically selling me, you know, a particular product or even a particular line of products that they could, I mean, because then you just feel they're more like a salesman,
kind
of doctor.
They're just doing natural medications versus, you know, going to the regular doctor to just get medicated.
Right. But who could appreciate that, you know, that there's more than one brand of supplements that's good.
Right.
There's even more than one way. Like, are they only talking about supplements, or are they also, can they appreciate the role of essential oils? Or could they appreciate some other kinds of therapies, acupuncture, you know, chiropractic, all these other kinds of things? I just want to
have a holistic approach.
Yes. Yeah. Instead of just, you know, a very narrow scope.
Right. Yes.
No, and I think in a chiropractor, I would be looking for someone who is trained again specifically to treat me, that they're going to evaluate me And I would like for them, me personally, for them to be able to do that by touch and feel,
yes,
rather than x-rays, just because I don't really like x-rays, yeah, unless they're absolutely necessary. Right. So that they can touch and feel where things are out of alignment. I mean, I've been to a chiropractor before where I just felt like it was like an assembly line.
Yes.
You just, right, it was rack 'em and crack 'em. You know, everybody came in and you basically got the same adjustments and you did the same thing and then you left. I didn't feel like it was individualized.
You were back and needed to be cracked again the next day, mm-hmm, or earlier than that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are less than practitioners in every area.
Correct.
Less than plumbers who are, mm-hmm, just going to, you know, tell you it's this huge problem when it's really not. I mean, we've all been to that mechanic who tells you you need a whole new transmission when,
right,
it's really not that big of a deal. So, you know, go from some recommendations from some friends and stuff like that, exactly, to find one. And I mean, I would take the time to even interview somebody,
right,
if possible, probably over the phone. They might do that to just get an idea of their philosophy and make sure, because,
mm-hmm,
I mean, you're probably going to be spending a lot of money and certainly a lot of time with this person. So there has to be some trust and,
yes,
built up there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd have to add that the functional doctor is more if you have more medically related types of things. Because, mm-hmm, when I was diagnosed with cancer, that's when I went to a functional doctor, because they mix the kind of the Chinese medicine with regular medicine and give you alternatives that are much more holistic than like my breast surgeon did, mm-hmm, and the guy that wanted to put me on tamoxifen and, you know, all, mm-hmm, these things that the hospital and the specialist that I went to said, well, this is the only way or you're going to die. and I wanted some other alternatives, mm-hmm, than what they were giving me. Cause I was like, well, this bottle says there's a percentage that I'm going to die here too.
Right.
So what else can I look into? Mm-hmm. And so functional doctors usually have that MD training, but then they look at alternatives to supplement what would be done in a regular practice.
Mm-hmm. So that reminds me too. Well. There's also MDs, you know, and then there's DCs, which is Doctor of Chiropractic. There's also DOs, Doctors of Osteopathy, which are typically a lot more holistically minded. Probably a lot of functional medicine doctors are probably DOs.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's good to know. So something to look for if you're looking to maybe make a change in that area. So, mm-hmm, we wanted to talk a little bit. I see we don't have any questions yet, but if you do have questions or comments, we do have viewers, and you want to ask, we're talking about kind of nutrition, holistic, just how do you take care of yourself? We were kind of went on deficiencies and detoxing and then got off onto how to find somebody to help you with that. But we're going to take a question from one of our audience members that wrote in ahead of time. And because we're going to kind of move towards, you know, well, what do we do if we're busy? And because we're busy homeschool parents, how do I make these changes that work? And so Stacy wrote in and said, considering many special needs families follow a gluten-free, dairy-free diet to reduce inflammation and optimize health, do you have any quick breakfast ideas for this? Possibly vegan or a super start breakfast?
Well, the first thing I would say to that is, think outside the box a little bit and just broaden your idea of what breakfast actually is.
Good idea. Yes. Yes.
Because we tend to think just in America, okay, it's cereal or it's pancakes or it's, you know, fruit or something.
Right.
I mean, who says you can't have a salad for breakfast?
Yeah.
Or who says you can't have a sandwich for breakfast?
Yeah.
So just broaden the scope a little bit. Okay. So maybe even some of the same things that you would eat for lunch or you would eat for dinner, you can eat for breakfast. One of my favorites, one of my kids' favorites is a chia pudding.
Okay.
Which is a pudding. It could also be a dessert item, which seems to be popular for breakfast, right?
Right.
Cookie crisp and yes, all these other super sugary things that we eat for breakfast. But chia pudding is really a good one. Super duper simple to make. I mean, it's like a 5-minute prep, and I'm sure you can find bazillions of recipes online for it. But the basic idea is you take chia seeds, and you soak them overnight in whatever milk it is that you like. And they all work. You can soak them in water. It just wouldn't taste like anything.
Right.
But so coconut milk, almond milk, cashew milk, whatever you like. My kids prefer chocolate almond milk.
Yes.
but you could also just put cocoa in there for a little bit less sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes I cut it like the unsweetened milk with the chocolate. So you get the, you know, chocolate flavor, but it's still easy.
Right.
So anyway, you soak those overnight, the little chia seeds all plump up and then it basically eats like pudding. It's a little bit, you can just check the ratio for the cups of chia seeds to cups of liquid. I forget what the magic ratio is, okay. But to get it the consistency that you like.
Right.
But that one's a good one. Easy to eat, even on the go. It's got a nice texture to it. Texture like pudding with a little bit of crunch in there, but that one's a fun one. And then you could, of course, top it with whatever. Fruit toppings, nut toppings. I do think that in the morning, getting protein first thing in the morning is super important. I mean, I know she was asking for vegan options. I mean, eggs are my absolute favorite and my go-to, probably because I have my own chickens in the backyard.
Yes. So you got good eggs.
Those are real, real good eggs. But I think even oatmeal is really good, and that's overnight oats are a good option. Also pretty quick too, to where you're soaking the oats just like you soaked the chia seeds. You can even combine them.
Yeah, I do chia seeds in my overnight oats.
So. Yeah, I give it a little fun texture and stuff like that. And then I've seen a lot of times that have like all these little mason jars and you can fill up and make them, you know, for a few days at a time.
Right.
I mean, that's easy. That's a time saver. And then the kids can just grab them and then put their particular topping that they want on them. Slice some bananas, slice some strawberries, whatever, put on top.
Yeah.
Even mix in like a tablespoon or two of peanut butter.
Oh,
to another way
to
get some protein
in. Or any kind of nut butter that you wanted to put in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's
oatmeal is also super easy to make like in a real big batch. If you have a lot of kids, crock pot, put it in overnight. You've got oatmeal for everybody in the morning.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a good one.
Yeah. And then you can just add like nuts on top of it to add that protein or whatever else that you want separately. That's a great idea. Yeah. So do you have any other suggestions for like busy nutrient dense foods?
Oh gosh. Specific foods. I'm a big nut eater myself.
Yeah.
I like all of the nuts pretty much. And so I'm always having, you know, a bag of almonds. I've always got a bag of cashews. I've always got a bag of pistachios on hand. Those are easy to take. They're high in protein.
Right.
And, you know, I can feel good about those. Of course, they're even better for you if they're not roasted. It takes a little adjusting, I think, palate wise to want to eat almonds straight or, you know, other ones.
The sprouted ones tend to be a little more palatable for me than the raw ones.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I like those too as well. Almonds, I think they're even a little bit sweet when they're not roasted and salted. But I love having nuts on hand. We also eat a lot of beans. We don't eat a ton of meat at our house. So I'm a big bean person. Again, I like all the beans. I like black beans and pinto beans and navy beans and kidney beans and all the beans. So those are fun to mix up. And I mean, I've just really had a good time with my Instant Pot later.
Oh, okay.
I feel like it allows me to be totally irresponsible and forget. I can haven't thought about dinner all day. And then what I can go from like frozen chicken parts to dinner in like about an hour with that thing. And it makes beans really fast. You don't have to soak them overnight before, like, you know, you do with their crock pot.
Yeah.
In the Instant Pot, you can go from dry beans to ready to eat in an hour.
Very cool.
So that's amazing. I love the Instant Pot. In fact, I just bought myself another like Instant Pot cookbook for all the things that all the different things that you can make in there.
And,
Right. And I think really for me too, the planning is a crucial component, which I don't do very well at all. When I do, it's great. It's fantastic. Right. It's just like, instead of it swirling through my brain all day, what am I going to make for dinner? What am I going to make for dinner? What am I going to make for dinner?
Yes.
if you plan, it's just done. And then you can just execute the plan.
Exactly.
So I know it's a pain in the butt. I really hate doing it. But once you do it, that is what makes life easier for the whole week.
Right. Exactly. And then you feel like I'm making good choices instead of, I just decided in the last 30 minutes, this is what we're going to eat. And it wasn't the best choice, but it's got food on the table. Mm-hmm. And that's not where we want to be, because in the long run, we're always cutting ourselves short of those good, nutritious, you know, meals that we could be making. And we have the time for, but we do have to plan ahead of time. And yeah, my bean hack is I have a mill, so I put my dry beans in there and make powder out of them, and I can make anything with bean powder. So you can make dips, you can make gravy with it instead of flour, and
I feel like cauliflower these days too. You can make anything out of cauliflower,
right? Exactly. Right. Yes.
Rice, pancakes, and pizza crust, and everything. You can make everything out of cauliflower.
Yeah. Awesome. So we are in the holiday season right now. I know when this podcast comes out, we'll be beyond that. So I'll address that in my next question. But for those that are watching live and will watch through the holiday season, you know, we just have holiday gatherings and food that we regret eating. And it doesn't mean we have to throw everything out of our diet. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? But then how do we, you know, start making those changes even during this season?
Holidays are tricky.
Yeah.
For everybody, because it seems like every gathering is based around food, right? You're getting together for a meal, or it's a cookie exchange, or there's candy just flowing from everywhere. So it is very difficult. So you definitely need to make a plan and have a plan ahead of time, or you're just going to be, you know, dragged down the river with everybody else doing what everybody else is doing. So maybe my best tip would be a picky eater.
Okay.
If you could limit yourself to just the things that you normally eat, you probably won't fall off the wagon so much.
Right.
Now, again, on holidays, there are a lot of special foods that you don't have at other times.
Right. Yes.
Exactly. And what our tendency is to be like, well, it's the holidays, you know, I'll do it this once. But then there's like 17 holiday parties that you go to. So you're like, I'll do it this once. Well, 17 times.
Right.
And before you know it, you know, you've gained weight and all this kind of stuff. So,
and yes, you're cranky and
not a good place to be. So having a plan ahead of time is a really good idea. For me, I am picky eater, so that helps, because I don't just dive into whatever's there. I'm like, what is that? What's in that? Because I don't like bell peppers and I don't eat pork and, you know, some stuff like that. So that eliminates a lot of things right there. But I think, I mean, you've heard it said before, you know, if you're going to indulge in something just a little bit, what your mind really wants is the taste of it.
Right.
It doesn't need an entire slice of pie to get the feeling and the effect of the pie.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So half it. Half it with someone. Or just have the, you know, the little bite of something. Another rule I have for myself is, well, I don't eat anything white. Not only because it's probably white sugar or white flour or whatever, but I don't know. White things just kind of weird me out. So I don't like to eat, especially bright white things. I just feel like that's not natural. It shouldn't be bright white.
There's very few things that, grow.
If it comes to desserts for me too, I don't eat anything unless it's chocolate.
Okay.
Like that's just
my
rule.
You might as well be discerning. If you're going to, you know, say I'm going to indulge in something, I'm going to make it what I really, really want.
To me, it's not worth the calories and everything if it's not going to be something that I really enjoy. So just last night we were out to dinner for my board for my homeschool co-op, and we were at a nice farm to table restaurant. It was so good, and having all these yummy foods.
Right.
But for dessert, they had two choices and neither one of them were chocolate. So I was like, well, I guess tonight's just not my night. Yeah. So I told myself, when I get home, I'll have one of my little dark chocolate truffles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was enough, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think it really is the mind that, because we were at a So Leslie goes to my church and we had a women's gathering and there was nothing my daughter and I could eat because we eat vegan and gluten free. And I also don't do any sugars either. And so there was, it was just, no, there's nothing here for you. But it was that, okay, so we are here to enjoy being around other people. Mm-hmm. And then when we go home, we made a full dinner mm-hmm. and then we ate that when we got home. But again, it's, I'm not going to have an awful time just because I ate what I've limited myself to mm-hmm. for various reasons. That isn't the purpose of the gathering. Mm-hmm. And
right. It kind of gives you something to do while you're there.
Right.
But it's not the point. And especially, you know, if you know that you have food issues like that,
right.
I mean, you know, if you eat vegan, I mean, that's hard. Not very many people are doing that or even having any. I mean, there was literally nothing that yeah. y'all could eat. There was like no vegetable, anything. Cause I was like,
could they at least have a vegetable platter or fruit? And there was nothing.
I mean, not me. Even the little tray of like carrot sticks and broccoli or whatever.
Right.
But I mean, for stuff like that, if I know, I'm just not a good buffet person either. Cause again, I am right. kind of picky. I will just have at least a snack before I go. Yeah. That way I'm not hungry when I get there and then feel the need to eat something just because I'm starving, you right. know, and I'm going to eat something that I shouldn't or that I didn't want to. And then, you know, put myself in a bad position.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm lucky that I don't have any food sensitivities or, you know, serious allergies or anything.
Right.
But if you're in that boat, then you're going to pay for it. So prepare right. ahead of time.
That is true. Yeah.
Eat ahead of time. Or like, you know, this could have been a special fun thing. You know, it's you and your daughter with both the same food issues and you'll mm-hmm. be like, hey, we'll just go out to this place that we like afterwards right. or, you know, exactly. something like that. And yeah. still make it fun, still make it special, but not, you know, not totally regret it and right. not feel like you're missing out.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that can happen so much. And we don't want to limit ourselves just because our food ends up being limited. And I know a lot mm-hmm. of people in our community, they have some sort of dietary needs. Like we ran this family camp this last summer and more people than not who registered had dietary needs. And mm-hmm. so I'm sitting there working with the cook going, well, and then he's like, and how many people? And I'm like counting down the list. And some people had like six in there. And I'm like, okay, so this person makes that list and that list. It's mm-hmm. just insane. But it was nice that we were able to accommodate that too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not often you have that. So we are, we're just about out of time. I wanted to talk a little bit about setting healthy goals, mm-hmm. you know, into the new year and how would you approach that? You know, saying, okay, I've heard all this, I am convicted and I, you know, I'm going to do my best through the holidays, but I really want to start making some definite changes mm-hmm. into the new year. Where's a good place to start?
I think a good place to start is with prayer.
Yes.
And ask God really what He has for you because He wants the best for you.
Yeah.
He wants you on a path of health and wellness so that you can serve and do all the things that you're supposed to do for Him. Absolutely. And just like you would pray about any other situation, I mean, it says, why would He not give good gifts to His children?
Exactly.
If you ask for wisdom, He's going to give it to you.
Yes.
So ask God to tell you, what does He want you to do?
Absolutely.
And maybe even before that, can we plan to not gain any weight over the holidays yes. so that we don't, you know, have like more to
too
lose?
Too many toxins when the detox happens.
Right. Because I think a lot of people really, they just throw caution to the wind for November, December and say, you know, I'll deal with it in January.
Yes. Well,
I'm not sure how that works out right. on an ongoing basis. Yeah. So I'd say just really pray about it and ask God for direction because, I mean, you know, there's so many things out there, so many different diets to try, so many different directions to go. You could just keep blindly trying everything and, you know, seeing yeah. if it all works. But again, if you could just have God tell you, you know, right. yeah. you ask Him. He will tell you.
He will. Yes.
It's
yes.
a journey to be on, right? Yeah. And not to say that He's going to tell you, you know, right away, flashing neon sign, this is the diet that you need to do. And you're going to do that diet and everything's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish it worked like that yes. for all the things that we have to pray about. But sometimes right. the journey for you is going through the process of, yes. of learning.
Build your faith. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. And see what He has for you, because maybe I mean, maybe your goals aren't realistic. Oh, I think that's I love to do all the New Year stuff and set goals and have all these things. And my husband is like, boo, we're not doing any of that stuff. So I just kind of keep it to myself. Right. But I think for a goal, you know, make it a little bit challenging, but attainable.
Right.
That way it gives you some motivation to do it instead of just knowing right away it's totally out of reach and you're never going to do it. Yeah. I think it also really helps to have a buddy.
Oh, absolutely.
Either, you know, your spouse that you can do something together with, a friend who's going to do it with you, just for accountability, and whether it's a detox or whether it's a, you know, a new diet plan. And, you know, there's like Facebook groups and stuff for all these different things, just to get some community around you.
Yeah.
Because we're not meant to be alone, of course.
Right.
But that gives you just some mental support, emotional support to do whatever it is that you want to do. And I'd say make it whatever the goal is. You know, if you're trying to lose, say, 15 pounds or something like that.
Right.
I mean, make sure that that is actually attainable and give yourself some checkpoints along the way instead of, I'm going to lose 15 pounds by March or something. Right. And like, you don't weigh yourself until then, you know, give it checkpoints along the way to make sure that you're making some progress and going along your goal. And don't be afraid to tweak it. You start doing something, right. It might work for a while and then start to not. Well, yeah, tweak it.
Right.
And keep praying about it the entire time. And God will lead and He will guide you.
Yeah. Great advice. Absolutely. Love. Good way to end. So, yes. So much good advice. And thank you so much, Leslie, for
sharing.
Thank
you so much for having me. It's been fun.
This was a good conversation. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it blessed you as much as it blessed us. So we've been focusing on parent care this month, and we have one more conversation still coming up this Friday, actually. And my friend Lisa is going to be over for that. And she has walked with me on my cancer journey, and she was the one who introduced me to a functional doctor. I had no idea what that was, but she has spoken a lot of truth into my life a lot, and I'm just super excited to share her with you, as well as some of these other ladies that have joined me this month on our broadcast. And so join me back again for that time. And then just keep praying about it. Like Leslie said, you know, God will lead and guide, and He will not fail you. You just have to keep trusting Him, and He will do well. So thanks so much. This was a great conversation. We definitely filled more than an hour. So, and we'll see you all back here for the next show. So have a great rest of your week. God bless, and we'll see you then. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
I want to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you'll find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
This has been Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer.
This is Perseus Poku, host of the Sound Reasoning Ministry podcast. Learn how to share and defend your faith by listening to us weekly. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.